At Subway, start 2010 right with surprisingly low-fat choices. The Piled High Subway Club or Turkey Melt, fresh toasted under bubbly cheese. Both are part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simple way to enjoy eating better. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. How has this guy not been on during the NBA season? We're going to tape this on Monday. Hold on. What's today's date, Joe Mead?
It is the 11th. Yes.
All right. New intro. Welcome to the BS Report. I'm not sure how 2 months of the NBA season has passed without our guest today being on the BS Report. But we're taping this on January 11th, a Monday, from ESPN Insider on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now. Chad Ford, what's happening?
What up, Bill?
A lot, apparently. This weekend, a story broke that, you know, I hate trade rumors and people. I'm convinced most of these trades happen and we never know. They just happen and then we find out after. In this case, it seems like it might have some legs. Chris Bosh and Andrew Bynum being the principals in some sort of trade that I feel like makes a lot of sense for both teams. If you're Toronto, you get something for Bosh. He's clearly going to leave. So you get a center, you get a franchise center to possibly to build your team around. And the Lakers just get the upgrade of a Bosh Gasol. Holy mackerel. Chad Ford, please tell me that this isn't going to happen.
I think it very well might. If I were Brian Colangelo, I'd really seriously have to consider making this deal because I don't think he has any way of predicting what Chris Bosh is going to do this summer. I think of all the top-tier free agents that we've been looking at, the Dwayne Wade, the LeBron Jameses, the Boshes, I think Bosh has the best chance of moving. I think there's a number of teams that will have very compelling cases to make that Bosh should join them. There's going to be several teams like Miami, for example, that will have the money. And I don't think he has a compelling reason to stay in Toronto.
Hey, Chad, can I make a prediction?
Yeah.
He's leaving.
Yeah, I think he's going to leave. And so
I don't even think it's a prediction. I think he's leaving. He is leaving, and he's going to play in a bigger market.
And Brian Colangelo has to get something back for him. And I don't think there's any way he can get better than Andrew Bynum. We tried to sign and trade over the summer. There's all sorts of issues with that. Teams have to want to give up something in return. I don't think he can get any better than Andrew Bynum. And I actually think it makes some sense for Toronto because they have Andrea Bargnani, which clearly Brian Colangelo is enamored with. The guy can score. He's a terrible rebounder. He's not a center. If you put him on the floor with Andrew Bynum, I think that makes a lot more sense than putting Bargnani and Bosh on the floor together. And then in L.A., it would just be ridiculous good.
Well, and really, like, Bargnani is listed as the center and Bosh is listed as the forward. But if you watch them, Bosh is the center. He's the guy who protects the rim, and Bargnani can't rebound. He doesn't block shots. He's a power forward. I'm not sure what kind of ceiling you have if he's your second best player. But Bynum with Bargnani makes a lot more sense to me. And also, you know, if you're going to do this trade, do it now. You know, do it so you have time to incorporate Bynum onto your team. And, you know, it's the Eastern Conference. They might be a 5 seed at 41-41. Why not do it now?
I think they should. I think all sorts of things can change over the summer. And the interest in Bosch doing the sign-in trade goes down. Maybe Bosch decides that I want to go back to, I want to play for Houston, for example, or I'd really like to play with Dwayne Wade instead of L.A. I mean, I know we all think every player wants to play in L.A., but I think Bosch is one of those players who might choose a little bit different market. He's not as starstruck as some of the other players in the league. I could see him going to a Miami or to a Houston. But if he goes to L.A., he will resign there because they'll be able to give him the extra year. They'll be able to give him the bigger pay raises each year that of his new deal. And all of that, I think, points to Bosch being in L.A., so I would do the deal right now.
Here's why he would resign with L.A. I have four reasons. One is the weather. Everybody who moves out here, they think they're on vacation here and they never end up leaving. It just, it's immediately seductive. Two, he'll be on a team with Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, Ron Artest, Lamar Odom. Why would you want to leave that? I mean, it would, if you're a competitor, why would you want to leave a team that has a chance to win 70 games every year? Phil Jackson, he's never played for a coach like that, ever. And then, as you mentioned, the extra year, you know, getting that 6 year versus having to sign somewhere else for five or doing a complicated sign and trade, things like that. It just makes a ton of sense. And I think for the Lakers, it's a little bit of a gamble because you're giving up a potential franchise center. I'm not going to give him franchise center status. I'm giving him potential for a guy that might leave in 4 months. But I think you have to do it. And I just think as a Celtics fan, you know, this is almost game over to me. If they're going to have Bosch, Gasol, Odom, Kobe, Artest, I mean, this is a nightmare.
It is a nightmare, and I think it would do something else too. I think it would have a very interesting ripple effect on. We've been talking really for about 2 years about the summer of 2010.
Yep.
If Bosch gets locked up by LA, I think you'll immediately see teams like, for example, the New Jersey Nets say this free agent market isn't going to produce what we thought it was going to produce. We don't want to be like the Detroit Pistons, have all this money. No free agents to really pay, so we end up overpaying for guys because we feel like we have to spend the money.
Whoa, you just criticized Joe Dumars. Oh!
And I think
I'm going to applaud that.
I think you'll have to see teams like the Nets say, let's see what we can do with our expiring contracts and some players to make some trades to try to get players that we like now, as opposed to being stuck in a position where we might have to overpay next summer. We could see the cap space for a number of these teams, including Miami, including New Jersey, just melt away as they decide we can do something with these contracts now and get a guy that we know we like, or we could roll the dice this summer and pray that one of these top guys come to our team. And so it could have a huge domino effect in the league if the Raptors and Lakers were to pull this deal off.
I would go a step further. I don't think it could have a domino effect. I think it will. I think this would be the most dramatic thing that could have happened for any possible scenario for the summer because, well, first of all, let's be honest. The word in the street is that LeBron and Bosch are going to be a package deal this summer. And, you know, I keep hearing Chicago or New Jersey or the Knicks, who knows, but they have a lot of intertwining ties. Let's put it that way. One guy in particular who everybody refuses to acknowledge is the biggest power broker in this league, but World Wide West. And
right.
I think that the odds of LeBron and Bosch playing together next year, wherever, are extremely high. And if Bosch goes to LA and ends up staying there, then now I think that means LeBron might stay in Cleveland because he's not going to change teams unless he's going to war with a big guy. And who is the, he's not going to, it's not going to be Amar'e Stoudemire. Who else is there? You know? And then if you take that a step further, so now Bosch stays, maybe LeBron stays in Cleveland. Now what do you do if you're the Knicks? Like, do you just kind of roll everything over to 2011? What if LeBron signs a one-year deal to stay in Cleveland versus a six-year deal? What does Dwayne Wade do? It's going to kind of remove the drama, I think, of this summer. I think people are going to end up staying where they are.
I think that's right. And I already think the Knicks are screwed. I don't think they're getting LeBron and Bosch. They're not going to have the money unless they pull off some sort of miraculous deal trade deadline and move Eddie Curry and Jared Jeffries for expiring contracts, which there's about a 1% chance they're able to do that.
I'd say zero.
They're not going to have the money to get both of those guys.
Well, what did you think of my idea that they need to include Gallinari in a trade to get rid of those contracts?
Well, they couldn't do that. I mean, I don't think anyone there in New York is so in love with Gallinari that they wouldn't consider that. The problem is, if they move him as well, then you're asking, let's say, LeBron and Bosch to come to a team that has no talent,
yeah,
other than maybe, you know, if you consider Wilson Chandler a talent, no talent at all on the team. They're going to take up the large majority of all of their cap space, and they're going to be stuck with a bunch of minimum players around them. I just don't think that's a great scenario for LeBron James. That's why I think you and I both like the LeBron to the Clippers scenario. At least LeBron would be surrounded by a number of interesting young players. But not in New York.
And the Clippers are starting to play better. I mean, they're starting to resemble the team that I picked them to make the playoffs. Blake Griffin got hurt. And as always with the Clippers, you get one injury and they don't play well. And then Dunleavy in the front office, we have injuries. You know, they use that as a crutch. Meanwhile, Portland's lost 2/3 of their team and they're still winning. I think injuries could be a major crutch. And I think the Clippers have used that to their advantage with people to gain some goodwill. But now Baron Davis is invested. I've seen him play hard now for 2 weeks. And it made me realize that he was out of shape last year and he really wasn't playing hard this year until about 3 weeks ago. If LeBron went there, I think that's a pretty interesting team. I just don't think – I don't think people want to sign with Donald Sterling. That's the bottom line. The word is out with this guy. Nobody's going to be like, yeah, I want to spend the next 6 years of my life with Sterling. I think the Bulls are a much more realistic scenario, you know, because they have Derrick Rose in place. They have Dang in place. They have Noah in place. And if they trade Heinrich, they would have the cap space to get Bosch and LeBron at the same time. Could you see that one happening?
I'm not sure that they can trade Heinrich for an expiring contract right now.
Really?
I don't think Heinrich has the value that he did a couple of years ago in the league. I've explored this because it seems like, you know, maybe Heinrich's the guy that could open that space up. I don't see it. I do think that Chicago is a heavy favorite to get Bosch. I'm still not convinced that even if they don't have the cap room for both places, if LeBron and Bosch decide not to hook up, that they could land LeBron. Bosch would be an absolute godsend to the Bulls.
Well,
but I don't think they're going to be able to move Heinrich for an expiring contract.
So you're telling me if Chicago called the Celtics and they said, you give us Tony Allen, Brian Scalabrine, and one more expiring contract and a number one pick in 2011 or whatever, or $3 million, whatever. We'll give you Kirk Heinrich. You now have a third guard that you haven't had basically for the last 3 years, whatever. You're telling me the Celtics would not do that?
I don't think they'd do it because of the money.
Wow.
They had a chance earlier in the year, and I'm not necessarily equating the value of these two players, but they had a chance to acquire Andre Nocioni for basically that same combination.
He wouldn't have played for us though.
Is a badass. He's a tough guy, a nice guy to bring off the bench. He's not a starter, but he's a nice guy to bring off the bench. And the Celtics wouldn't. And I think the Celtics liked him as a player, but because of the contract, they won't touch him.
I like Heinrich a lot more. I mean, I think he's a good defensive player. I was impressed by him in the playoffs last year. His contract goes backwards. He's one of those contract goes backwards guys. Every year it drops by $500K, but I don't know. I'm hoping. Now, the word on the street is that there's going to be a lot of potential buyout guys in February. We've already seen Ray for Alston. What kind of names are you hearing for that?
Well, you know, I think it's too early because I think all of those guys that are buyout guys are the same guys that we're going to see at the trade deadline play a big role. Like Tracy McGrady, for example. I think Tracy McGrady will be bought out by the Rockets if they can't trade him by the trade deadline, but he's so in play. All of these guys, even a guy like, and I can't believe I'm even going to mention his name on your podcast because it's going to open up a can of worms, but even a guy like Darko Milicic isn't playing at all. And there's been talk in New York about, oh, there's going to be a buyout or whatever, so he can go back to Europe. The Knicks would be crazy to buy him out because he's an expiring contract. He's an asset through the end of February. If they can't trade him, then, of course, then you buy these guys out. But I think there's so many teams who are having so much financial pressure. I could see lots of teams caving that last week of the February trade deadline and sending a pretty good player to a team in return for that expiring contract. And I think Knicks have to start thinking that forget about the summer of 2010, forget about our cap space. What can we do with these expiring contracts right now to put some players on teams? Because Mike D'Antoni will go crazy if Donnie Walsh has to go tell him, listen, Mike, we're not going to get any good free agents in the summer of 2010. We're going to push it off until the summer of 2011. I think Mike will jump off the bridge.
I've been saying this from the get-go. The Knicks' game plan should be summer of 2011, not summer of 2010. They're not equipped to compete in the summer of 2010 because they're never going to be able to get rid of the Curry and Jeffries contracts. So why not just roll everything over for a year and try and use the experience they have this year to get some 2011 guys? I mean, that's so logical to me. I don't get it.
I think as long as you don't mind your coach committing suicide, that's probably...
Well, but why would he commit suicide? Because they're not going to immediately be a contender this summer?
Well, he coached the team last year, and they were awful. He's coached the team this year. I actually think he's done a pretty decent job considering.
I agree.
Next year, they'll lose David Lee. They'll lose Nate Robinson. They'll lose Al Harrington and these guys. They won't be able to sign anybody to anything other than one-year deals.
Yeah.
And they'll be awful. So for 3 years, a coach like Mike D'Antoni has to coach really kind of absolute crap. I don't think Mike can handle it.
Well, why wouldn't you go for trade your expires this year for a guy that expires next year who's actually, you know, pretty good and then try to, you know, like say they turned, say they got Troy Murphy. Say they got Troy Murphy and Mike Dunleavy. For there to actually, Mike Dunleavy's not playing well. That's a bad example. Say they got Troy Murphy for Darko and Contino Mobley, and now you have David Lee and Troy Murphy with Bargnani off the bench. Like in the Eastern Conference, they could at least make the playoffs. They don't have a number one pick anyway. You know, I don't understand the point of going for the summer of 2010 when I don't think they're going to get anybody.
Well, I don't think they are any either, unless Donnie Walsh and James Dolan know something that we don't. I don't think they are either. But I'm not sure, again, okay, so in 2011, let's say they have $35 million in cap room to go spend. There still has to be great free agents. You have to piece them together. I'm just not sure.
Chad, they could
arrange... LeBron was the guy. Who's in 2011 who's guaranteed to go to the Knicks?
But they could arrange this so that their entire roster expires in 2011, except for Gallinari. That's my point. Like, they could... take their assets they have this year and basically go for an expiring in 2011 team and actually pull that off, because now you have the Curry contract and Jeffries. Those guys are coming off. And you turn all the expiring contracts you have this year into guys. I wish I had the list in front of me. But, I mean, it's people like Troy Murphy. I think Golden State has somebody that's a big contract. But, I mean, I think that's insulting to their fans that they're going to string them along, and especially if this Bosch trade happens. If this Bosch trade happens, they cannot look their fans in the eye and say, we're going to get a bunch of guys in this summer, unless they think they can get Dwayne Wade. Which, what do you think of that? Is that possible?
I think Dwayne Wade's a lock to go back to Miami.
Yeah, I did too. That's the scenario we didn't talk about, is they're going to have a ton of cap space. And if we're talking about a Bosch-LeBron combo, Miami is one of the teams that would be in play. My question is, if you're LeBron, you want to be the global icon, you want to be in a big market, is Miami the kind of place where he could do all the things that he wants to do? I would say no. What do you think?
No, not like New York and L.A., but certainly better than Cleveland. And if, for example, Wade, LeBron, and Bosch could all end up on the same team, that would create such an enormous amount of attention. I think he could do a lot. NBA players love Miami. It's probably, number two, number three destination city for an NBA player in the league.
Yeah.
And I think LeBron would be very comfortable in Miami.
Is it apocryphal? Is it an urban legend? Or... was there really some sort of promise made at the Olympics with these guys that they would all play together and do their best to play together
to end up
on the same team?
I've heard it from a number of guys. Obviously have not heard it from LeBron, Wade, or Bosch. I've heard it with guys who are associated with the Olympic team. You know, you hear these urban legends almost every season when there's big free agents out there. They're going to combine forces together. They'll take less money to play together, and it really never ends up happening.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty skeptical. Miami is the most interesting, I think, scenario for that to happen. I think the only way it happens is if Bosch Wade and LeBron all decide to take a little bit less money, even if they move Michael Beasley and, let's say, a sign-and-trade for Bosch and do some things, they'll come up a little bit short. And so the guys will have to take a little bit less money to do something like that. And you know, maybe those guys will, because they're going to make so much money on the back end with the endorsements and everything else. But I'm skeptical. I think Wade's going to stay in Miami. I do think that LeBron will either be in Cleveland or Miami. And I think Bosch is the wild card. And if the Lakers trade for him, that's where he'll end up in L.A.
It's too bad LeBron and the Clippers isn't totally a realistic possibility, because that would be the most fun. And to have Kobe and LeBron in L.A. playing in the Staples Center for 82 regular season games and then God knows how many playoff games, I just think that would be incredible. You know, and no move would be worth more for a team than LeBron going to the Clippers, because now they could charge Laker prices. They could charge four times as much as they're charging right now for their seats. So there's no amount of money that you could even put on him being worth to them. Like, he would double the value of their franchise.
And you have a credible chance of in 2 years of being the best team in L.A.
Yeah.
What I wish is that Kobe didn't have a no trade clause, because I think what would be interesting is if LeBron went to L.A. this summer and convinced L.A. to do a sign and trade with me and Kobe.
Oh.
Send Kobe to Cleveland. I'll come to L.A. pair up with Bosch and Pau Gasol, and now you've got a young team that could be dominant for a decade. I think the Lakers would do that deal 10 times out of 10, except Kobe would veto that deal 10 times out of 10.
Chad, do you realize what you just did to the Laker fans listening to this? They're going to fly to Hawaii and kill you.
Why?
You don't trade Kobe Bryant.
Not for LeBron James?
You don't even broach that subject with a Laker fan.
They think
Kobe's the guy. He's the new Jordan. They're not going to trade him.
Kobe's been the guy.
He is incredibly popular here.
He's 38 years old.
I know, but you couldn't trade him. He's really I know it's hard to believe unless you live here, but he's really the most popular guy here. And I can't see them ever considering trading him. Doesn't matter, because he's got the veto thing. Hey, let's talk about a couple teams that remade themselves this year and actually gave their fans hope. Surprisingly, teams that I had kind of counted out: Sacramento, Milwaukee, and then I guess you could throw in the Zombie Sonics as well, though we kind of knew they were coming. But Sacramento, biggest surprise of the year?
Oh, by far. They're doing this without Kevin Martin.
Yeah.
Who I think was widely considered the best player on their team. I thought they'd be the worst team in the Western Conference.
Me too.
Coming into the season. I knew Tyreke Evans was going to be an immediate impact player because he had an NBA body and he had an NBA game coming in. I think he has more weaknesses than people are acknowledging, but he was going to be an immediate impact player. But I didn't see all that fitting together and Sacramento flirting with being like a 500 team. I just didn't see it. And so, they've got a lot of future, a lot of hope. And I think they're going to be able to parlay Kevin Martin into something good at the trade deadline. I don't think he'll be great, but I wonder, like Minnesota, who's out there shopping Al Jefferson, for example, whether at the end of the day a Kevin Martin for Al Jefferson deal is in a deal that kind of makes sense for both teams. And now you start to have like a Tyreke Evans and an Al Jefferson, and I think that would be pretty interesting. I think Sacramento has a much brighter future than I thought 2 months ago.
If Minnesota trades Al Jefferson for Kevin Martin, that guy should be disbarred like a lawyer. The GM, David Kahn, the GM should be like a lawyer type deal, where if somebody does something that's so egregious, you get disbarred from your profession. That's what I would suggest for that. I can't believe that he's shopping out Jefferson. Guy hurt his knee in January. He's been hurt his knee 12 months ago. How many guys command a double team in the low post in the NBA right now? Five? You're going to trade one of them I mean, I can understand him investigating the Danny Granger component, but God, if he traded him for basically an offensive guard who can't guard anybody, that doesn't make sense. But I can totally see him doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's David Kahn. He's probably listening to the podcast. So we'll
sure
talk
he
about,
is.
Because I think that's kind of how he has to run everything. He has to kind of listen to everything else and try to figure it out. I'm not sure David Kahn has been born with these amazing scouting skills and kind of the ability to kind of see the entire league. But, I don't know. The story out of Minnesota is that Kevin Love and Jefferson don't get along.
That makes no sense to me, though, because they're both good guys. You're telling me they don't get along?
That's the story. I'm a little bit surprised. I think they can play together.
It's ridiculous.
I can understand why you might want other configurations, but I think they can play together.
I mean, if you're going to say we're worried because neither of these guys are true centers, they don't protect the rim, or like come up with a real reason to trade them. Don't come up with these are two really good guys that improbably don't like each other for some dumb reason. They sure looked like they liked each other in January when the two Wolves were winning before he got hurt.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
How about this part? Maybe you shouldn't have taken Johnny Flynn at number six. You know? Maybe you shouldn't have taken two point guards in a row. Maybe you shouldn't have sent Rubio back to Spain for 3 years. This league, the GMs have so much power, and we just saw it in Toronto with Colangelo where he made all these moves to try to keep Bosch, and Bosch is going to leave, and now they're stuck with this team of guys that can't guard anybody. I had it happen to me with the Celtics with the Vin Baker trade. Like GMs can do damage, and it's 5 years worth of damage. It's not like, oh, we're screwed for this season. It's, oh my God, we're screwed for 5 years. And I just think if you trade Al Jefferson, within a year of him having knee surgery, he's 25. He's got a great contract. He cares. He's had four coaches in 5 years. He's always been in a rebuilding situation. Like he's never just been on a decent team with a good veteran point guard. Like, I don't know. It's insane to me that you would trade him. I mean, do you agree that it's insane, or are you kind of more into it?
I'm wishy-washy about it. If I was David Kahn, I would do a Danny Granger for Al Jefferson deal.
I probably would too, but Danny Granger is a top 12 guy. I mean, Indiana's not going to do that trade.
Oh, no, they're not going to.
For a guy coming out of knee surgery. But
not in a heartbeat. But I could see them exploring it. I mean, if you can get the right guy to complement what you're doing with Kevin Love, that's fine. I wondered whether they shouldn't see about an Al Jefferson for Bynum deal. That's another, maybe potential thing where you could see it maybe benefiting Minnesota because you'd have a true center in there. I don't think they should go out and hit a guard with it. Every time an NBA GM trades a young big man for a guard, they lose.
Every time. And how about before David Kahn trades out Jefferson, he should go ask the Washington GM how the Rasheed Wallace and Chris Webber trades. Who was that, Wes Unseld? Hey, how'd those trades work out for you, Washington? You gave up Rasheed Wallace and Chris Webber before they became really good.
Got Strickland and Mitch Richmond, yeah.
I made up a trade last night in the trade machine, to nobody's surprise. I'm all about trying to make Daryl Morey's team better. If there's a three-team deal with Houston, Washington, and Minnesota, because it seems like Washington's going to start making moves, where Houston basically got Jefferson out of it and a bunch of the bad Minnesota contracts that expire this year. Minnesota got Caron Butler and T-Mac plus Chase Buttinger, whatever his name is.
Okay.
And then Washington got Scola. And Brian Cook's expiring, so they save $3 million, plus they have Scola. Like, it feels like there's something there with those three teams.
I could see that. I think anytime you're messing with Houston, you have to go to MIT and use their supercomputer to figure out how the guy fits. And, you know, I'll say this for Dork Elvis. He finds guys.
Yes.
Carl Landry, who would have thought Carl Landry could do what Carl Landry's doing right now? I didn't think Aaron Brooks could do what Aaron Brooks does for them. And he seems to have a sense of this that, and whether it's his formulas or whether maybe he has more pure scouting talent than we think. I almost just kind of back away from any type of suggestions to the Rockets anymore. I've been burned in the draft by giving bad grades when I see the guys they draft. I don't like those guys. They turn out great for them. Chase Buttinger, I wasn't sure Chase Buttinger was going to make it in the league. He's been good for them. I mean, whatever Daryl Morey does, he knows what he's doing. I would quit trying to make that team better. He knows how to make that team better. Help out some of these GMs who don't have a clue. Help out David Kahn.
Well, you know, this has been kind of an underrated subplot with the Celtics because he did have a knack for finding these guys. And let's say the Houston GM doesn't hire him. And let's say Darryl's working for the Celtics these last couple of years. We probably end up with a couple of these guys that he found for Houston. You know?
Yeah, you probably get Carl Landry or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and you look at basically Danny Ainge. We won the title, and he's been on a sabbatical for a year and a half. You know, the draft picks were bad. The Rasheed Wallace signing, I know he had a big game last night, but the guy's out of shape, and he plays hard once every six games. And we're committed to him for 3 years. Marquise Daniels got hurt. What were the odds? Seriously, were you shocked that Marquise Daniels got hurt? All this guy does is get hurt. But they haven't been able to boost the back half of that roster. And now you have the starters playing too many minutes. Rondo I'm terrified of Rondo getting hurt. He's playing at breakneck pace, too many minutes. And, I think lack of depth is really going to potentially hurt them down the road. We're already seeing them wear down. What are you hearing about KG's knee?
I'm not, which scares me. And what's going on there? There's been a cone of silence around that to a certain extent. But I want to just make a plug for Ainge, though, as a talent evaluator. And this is the type of stuff I think I can – maybe he'll kill me, but I think I can talk about this after the draft now.
Durant?
Ainge was the only GM – I know there's all this revisionist history that goes on after the draft and the player's good. Like, oh, yeah, we really love Brandon Jennings. He was number two on our board. That's BS. I talked to all the GMs in the league, and no one had Brandon Jennings ranked that high. Danny Ainge had Tyreke Evans ranked as the number two pick in the draft.
Really?
If you remember, at the closer to the draft, the Celtics were exploring deals to try to get up there. In fact, we heard Rajon Rondo's name kind of prominently out there. As a guy who was out there, as they were exploring maybe getting a pick, they were after Tyreke Evans. And that one, I think, is playing out in Ainge's favor. Number four for Evans was generally considered a little bit high when I would talk to most of the GMs in the league. They liked him, but he couldn't shoot. He was wild in college. No one thought he was really a point guard.
He's not.
And clearly he's been better than all of us thought. I mean, everybody thought he was a top 10 pick. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, he was a highly ranked prospect. No one thought he was going to be this good coming on, except for Ainge. And Ainge has done that. Durant, Chris Paul, he went after. We know that during the draft.
Jefferson.
Ainge knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's great at spotting college players, with the exception of the 2008 draft, which, you know, he wasn't really picking from the cream of the crop at that point. I think where the Celtics have struggled is identifying potential sleepers, you know, and maybe you could say Rondo is the one case where, you know, that worked out for them. But I'm talking about those fringe Carl Landry, Louis Scola. Like, we've never had a European guy. We never seem to take a chance in the guy who the only reason he's dropped is like a DeJuan Blair type situation. And, I guess Big Baby is the one time that they were able to get a little bit lucky, late round, second round, things like that. But, you know, is Big Baby making or breaking you? It just seems like they're maybe like one or two guys short again, which is hard to believe because I felt that way in 2008. And then they lucked out with P.J. Brown, you know, and that he was able to give them something. I don't know where the P.J. Brown type player is coming this year, but it has to be a backcourt guy. You made a good point, though, about Durant, Paul, Tyreke Evans, and who was the other one he had?
Well, he had Rondo.
Rondo and Jefferson. That's pretty good. That's a nice decade.
And even Kendrick Perkins, getting him at, 26?
Yeah, 27. I mean, that was a flyer. That was a flyer, though. I don't, you know, I think they were hoping, but yeah, some of these guys, Danny seems to sense when somebody has star power. You know, and maybe that's something where you're a former player and you played with guys who had that quality and you can just see it or something. But then why wouldn't Kevin McHale or Isaiah Thomas have that quality? You know, like to be able to spot the guys. So, you think that the Kings trade Kevin Martin?
I think they trade Kevin Martin because I'm with you. At the end of the day, I know they desperately want Tyreke Evans to be a point guard, but they would be so much better off putting him at the two and getting a point guard who could shoot the basketball playing the one. And I think they'd be a better team. There's been talk about Calderon for Kevin Martin. That's another kind of interesting thing. Maybe you could
Calderon's not that good. He's not in the classic Kevin Martin.
On the Raptors.
Yeah.
But the Raptors could conceivably even get worse defensively. If you put Kevin Martin on that floor with Turkoglu and Bosch and Bargnani, that would be fun.
You know, the Kings fans were upset because I was saying that Tariq Evans and Kevin Martin couldn't play at the same time. And I still don't think that. If they're your two guards, who's going to guard the other team's point guard? I think Tariq Evans is one of those, you know, potentially might get there. How Dwayne Wade and Brandon Roy are, where they're not the point guard, but they are, but they're aware of where their teammates are and they can score, but they can also find open guys. He might get there 4 years from now. He's not there now. But the snare that nobody's mentioning is that you could play this guy at small forward because he's built like a truck, you know? So why couldn't they just keep Kevin Martin, play Tariq Evans at small forward, and then Beno Udrih has actually been playing fantastic. And just see what you have and play that lineup for the rest of the year. And if you don't like it, do something this summer.
I think it's a possibility. I think they would be better off moving Martin now while he has some value. Because if that doesn't work out, his value is going to sink. Clearly, they're going to be invested in Tyreke Evans. That's their franchise guy now.
And should be.
And if he doesn't pan out, if he doesn't work well together with Martin, his value goes down even further.
Right. You know, we did forget about one guy that Danny missed on, Brandon Roy. They had him in, and the doctors didn't like his knees.
Led
to the Telford trade.
And, you know, let's say this about Portland. Portland has, in part, done well in drafts because Kevin Pritchard has gambled. I mean, the doctors didn't like LaMarcus Aldridge either. There was a lot of concerns about there.
Yeah.
I think there had to be more concerns about Greg Oden, based off of everything else that we've seen, than was identified before the draft.
I know the Celtics had concerns. I know of two other teams that either saw the MRIs that he had or whatever and were just like, oh, not going near that guy. I mean, this was kind of the elephant in the room during the draft. And the whole legs being shorter, it's not like that was something we found out about 2 years after the draft. Like, people knew that when they were measuring them and stuff.
There was talk about it. And you know, I was pretty assured, given how thorough the Blazers are and the gazillion dollars they can throw at this, that they had every medical mind in the world scan him from top to bottom and give him the okay. And that's what they still served. So I don't know what to say about that. But
yeah.
Kevin Pritchard has shown that he's willing to roll the dice a little bit when other GMs get a little bit scared of potential injuries. I think the guy that's going to be really interesting in this year's draft is Evan Turner, who has been essentially a triple-double machine at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Looks like surefire, great NBA player. He's a great kid. He's going to come in and be a leader right away. But, you know, the guy broke his back 4 weeks ago, broke two vertebrae. He's back on the court at 70%, which I'm not sure is the wisest thing to do for his future. He's actually playing well again. It'll be really interesting to see whether when teams see those MRIs or whatever, they get a little scared away because backs are a scary thing.
Well, Gallinari, I know he's putting up decent stats and he looks good, but I don't like the way he runs. He runs to me like a guy who's just going to have more problems. You know, it doesn't seem like he's been the same since he hurt his back. And I know it's healed, but it just doesn't seem right. And I don't know. I wouldn't go near Evan Turner personally. I don't trust backs. I don't like backs, and I like feet.
I think you're pretty wise. There's been a history of guys who have, when they have had back injuries, that struggle to have long careers. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know whether Turner's injury is such that's not a big deal or not, but I know a lot of GMs are already leery, but guys like Kevin Pritchard will roll the dice and get a little bit talent a little bit, you know, later in the draft and roll the dice. And he's been burned a little bit, and in some ways he's been vindicated.
What happened with Tariq Evans? And you know, this is a guy that played two different guard positions. Nobody was sure what he was, and he had kind of a weird college season. Then his team got bounced, and he was definitely one of those a classic upside guy, as we call them. one of the all-time upside guys of the decade. Here's his ceiling. He doesn't have a ceiling, but here's his basement, and who the hell knows? Does his success change how we're going to evaluate some of the guys this year? Because there's a few guys who were in that mold this year.
You know, I don't think so. I think Tyreek Evans was a, and you know, maybe Brandon Jennings. Teams were doing their homework on him. I watched Team USA in the young guys, the under 19 guys, at the Hoop Summit when he was a high school player. And there was a lot of NBA scouts there. And, you know, the word was Tyreek Evans was a selfish guy. He was a ball hog. He was difficult to manage. He was going to Memphis, who, with the exception of Derrick Rose, had kind of have a history of guys who were a little bit difficult. And you know, scouts were not in love with this guy, even though he had the physical tools. I mean, we look at this year, maybe that guy's Lance Stevenson out of Cincinnati.
That's what I was thinking.
College teams were afraid to even recruit because of both his eligibility questions and his kind of penchant for being somewhat of a team cancer. The guy can play. There's no question Lance Stevenson is an NBA player. Will teams pass on him? And you know, the question that I have for you, Bill, because I've been reading your book, is to what extent do you think you're going to have an impact now? Because I actually know GMs have been reading your book about The Secret.
you think I'm changing the mindset of people?
I've had conversations with GMs about your book because especially when you're making the argument for The Secret, I think it's hard to poke holes in that.
The Secret is pretty solid. But
I think it's a very solid argument. And do guys like Lance Stevenson or even Tyreek Evans, do they get The Secret? Now, players can mature and figure that out. I still can't understand how Allen Iverson so high on your basketball pyramid, considering that Iverson doesn't get The Secret.
It's the biggest flaw in the book. You just pointed out the biggest flaw in the book. That was the one time I went with my heart instead of my head. Just because the fact that he dragged that 2001 Sixers team to the finals, that crappy team that he had, I think I weighed it too heavily, because the bottom line is his first 4 years, he definitely did not get The Secret. And then from 2005 on, you would definitely say he did not get The Secret. So, yeah.
And he has a lot of heart. I understand, because Iverson's a warrior. Yeah. And he goes out and he plays hard every night. He never takes a game off. But he's not doing it for the right. He's not doing it for the right reason.
Well, you know, the thing about The Secret is that I think it was a much more important thing 10 years ago, 20 years ago, than it is now. Because, you know, I don't know whether our society is changing or whether the league does a much better job of kind of handling these guys when they come into the league. Maybe the rookie salary cap has something to do with that. But we don't see as many problem guys as we did. I mean, think of the guys that we dealt with in the 90s. You know, Derek Coleman, the problems Chris Webber had, Kenny Anderson, Larry Johnson, Big Dog Glenn Robinson. Like, these were guys that, you know, were pretty cancerous coming out of the gate. And I just don't think we're seeing those guys anymore. I think the guys that we're seeing now seem – you know, pretty polished and kind of have their head on straight for the most part. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, you're going to have two guys in the draft that'll be really interesting cases that should be lottery picks based on talent. Lance Stevenson and then Kentucky's DeMarcus Cousins.
Right.
Who, based off his talent, should be a top five pick.
People are terrified of him.
In the draft, they're absolutely terrified of him, and not just because of innuendo and stories. You watch him on the court and there's times that he looks absolutely brilliant, and other times that he's just a dog out there. And then he's losing his temper and, you know, elbowing the guy in the face and, you know, all of these things. You're scared to death of him, but at the same time, how many 20 and 10 guys are there in the league?
Right. But is it worth it to have him, ultimately? He's giving you the 20 and 10, but he's also giving you, you know, a whole bunch of other things, too. I think a great example of a guy like this right now in the league who can probably be gotten for the right price, although he just did get hurt, but Anthony Randolph, who you could say maybe he's just in a bad situation. Maybe he's on a team. Maybe he doesn't click with his coach. He's on a team of guys that are going for their own shots for the most part. What if you put him in the right environment with a good coach, with a superstar type player that he could look up to? Is that guy redeemable? I think he's the most interesting trade candidate out of anybody in the league right now. Because I feel like you get them for a pretty low price.
I'm not sure anymore. I'm not sure. Well, now that he's injured and he's broke his foot or whatever, that may fit into it. I think Golden State has always known that he was a good player. I think that had a lot more to do with Don Nelson and the craziness there. I'll give you another example. It's Tyrus Thomas.
Yep.
He's insanely talented.
I wouldn't go near that.
And he doesn't get the secret or anything close to it. And, you know, the Bulls have tried, because the talent is there, for all of these years to figure out how to redeem him. I think he's gotten better, but not good enough. And does another team try to put him on a veteran team, hope that a team can kind of mentor him and he can become a great player? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, another good example is Zach Randolph, who everybody always said was a decent guy. Like, it wasn't like one of those things like Ty Thomas, you just hear like people don't like him. But I saw it with the Clippers. Like, his teammates actually did like him. You know, it's just that he did dumb things at the end of games. He went for his own stats. He had questionable judgment off the court. But now that he's gotten older, dare I say that was a fantastic trade by Chris Wallace. Unbelievable. I think I just get hit by a lightning bolt. But I mean, I definitely think they could have soaked the Clippers for maybe a future number one pick or something, because they did them such a favor taking his contract off their hands. But, you know, maybe as guys get older, these one-time problem guys, we saw it with Chris Webber. I think we saw it with Sheed in Detroit. You know, you get older, you're not a problem anymore.
We'll see.
You're giving me the we'll see.
I'm not sure what the over and under on Zach Randolph is. He's obviously on his best behavior. He's been playing fantastic. Right now, Looks like a great deal, and he can melt down tomorrow. One of my all-time favorite draft stories is with Zach Randolph. He was visiting the Sonics for a workout, and they went down to get Zach for his interview with, I don't know who the GM at the time was, but it may have been Rick Sund. And he was in the players' lounge watching SpongeBob SquarePants. And as they went in and said, "Okay, Mr. Sun's ready to meet with you," Zach Randolph said, can he wait 15 minutes? And they were a little put back. He said, "Why? I haven't seen this episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. I want to finish it before I go up there for my job interview with the Sonics."
Wow.
I think, you know, I love that story, but I also think this is the hardest thing for me while I could cover the draft. Is these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and we sometimes expect them to have the maturity of people in their 40s because of the amount of money they make and because of their high public profile. And I teach college kids at the university. Most of them are incredibly immature, and, you know, they couldn't hold down a job and be dependable night in and night out the way we expect these guys to be. And so I do have a little sympathy for your argument that as people get older, they get more mature, they get more responsible, and people are redeemable. And maybe Zach Randolph's one of those guys.
I mean, I just know from what happened to me personally, you know, I think you're a different person when you're 24, 25, 26 than you are when you're 29, 30, 31. You're a lot more capable of doing dumb things in your mid-20s and having bad judgment and maybe picking the wrong friends or getting involved with the wrong girl or whatever. By the time you're 29, 30, you've figured it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen this happen over and over again in the NBA, where teams have panicked and gotten rid of a guy maybe 2-3 years before they should have. You know, and in some cases, maybe it was the right move. Like, I think, you know, what we're seeing with Vince Carter now in Orlando, maybe this is just the guy that's never going to get it. You know, because you can't ask for a better situation, and yet that team's unhappy. He hasn't played well. And it just doesn't seem like he can exist in the team framework. You know, is he going to ruin that team? What do you think?
I don't think he's going to ruin it. I still think that's a good team. If anybody's going to ruin it, ironically, it's one of their best strengths, and that's Stan Van Gundy. I think he's so emotional.
Yeah.
82 games, a long season. He's got a veteran team. You cannot be going into cardiac arrest every night about your team. Yes, you want consistency. You want them playing better. The Magic haven't played up to their potential. But I think that really grates on veteran players. I just want to make one other argument, though, about this maturity, because I've been talking to GMs about this, and there's this idea that if a player takes 4 years to develop, even if they turn out to be a star, and maybe Andrew Bynum's a good example of this, What is the value of that pick when you have to set them there for 4 years over a player who could come in and contribute immediately but not be a star?
I mean, like you DeJuan Blair?
Have to wait 4 to 5 years for the guy.
Yeah. So you're saying like DeJuan Blair, getting him at 37, but he can immediately play, is almost in a way a little bit more valuable than somebody like DeMar DeRozan.
Right, because in 5 years, maybe everybody will say, wow, DeMar DeRozan's a great player. But for 5 years, the Raptors get nothing or literally nothing out of their – I'm not saying it's going to take 5 years for DeRozan, but NBA teams want to win. And they want players, especially high in the draft, that are going to come in and contribute. And I know for sure that that was a big reason why Sacramento goes Tyreek Evans over Ricky Rubio. There was so many question marks, not only about whether Rubio was going to come over to the U.S. or not, because that buyout was not done and he hadn't totally committed to coming to the NBA, but also just about the adjustment period for someone like Rubio. Rubio was thin. He was going to have to put on some strength. He was going to have to adjust to the league, as opposed to a guy like Tyreek Evans, who you knew from game one was able to go out there and play with pros.
But also maybe – you know, if you're the GM and you have a chance to potentially, if you get lucky, be good right away with Evans versus, you know, with Rubio, it's going to take a couple of years and you might not be there by the third year.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I think that was big for Jeff Petrie.
Yeah. Cause there's rumors that he was either going to be on his way out or he's going to lose a power struggle or whatever. And now those rumors are gone and I'm sure they'll sign him to a 20-year extension because he just had, I think, the two best back-to-back drafts. In the 10 years you've been doing this, has anybody done better in back-to-back drafts? I'm trying to think.
Petrie's done well.
Degree of difficulty?
He historically has done well. He had that little lull there for a while when he was drafting guys like Quincy Doobie, but he's definitely redeemed himself with the last couple of drafts.
Well, his big problem has been overpaying players. And I had somebody tell me this once, that the agents would much rather negotiate with a former player versus somebody who never played in professional basketball, because former players tend to be like, they know it from the other side. Ah, we'll give him the money. He deserves it. They know what it's like to be underpaid. So maybe they end up overpaying. Whereas you take somebody who's never played in the league and they're like, no, you're worth this much. We're not going over that. You know, we're not going 1 cent over what you're worth. I do think that's the one thing that hopefully going into this decade, teams are going to start to realize, is that you can't spend $75 million on Emeka Okafor and win the title. You know, it's like, if it's not a superstar, you can't pay superstar money to non-superstars. You can't pay franchise money to non-franchise guys. Do you think the league has figured this out or not?
I don't think they figured it out enamored with ex-players. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, these guys have never negotiated anything in their life. They've had agents negotiate everything for them. And then on the other hand, now you have a professional negotiator. Then all the top agents are very, very good at what they do versus someone who's never negotiated anything before in their life. In fact, during their playing career, many of these guys are so good, they weren't even out buying things. They had other people and personal assistants and other people out doing virtually everything for them. And then you pit this guy against the professional, they're going to get killed every time. But right. Owners are so enamored with ex-players that I think that it's really tough for them to just kind of throw that out the window and say, okay, I'm going to hire a guy like Daryl Morey. I mean, I think that was a gutsy call by Houston. I think it was the right call. And not all ex-players are dumb. I mean, you always tease me about liking Joe Dumars, but the one thing about Dumars, except for this summer, was, you know, Dumars had run a couple of successful businesses in addition to being a player. He understood how to kind of run things and be a CEO as well as an ex-player, and I think he did a really great job. This summer, wasn't in love with their free agent class, and it certainly seems to be bombing them. But here's the other thing. I don't think fans are ready, because all of us knew that Ben Gordon wasn't worth $65 million.
Right.
And the Bulls fans knew it. Bulls riot beat writers knew it. They would have killed the Bulls if they would have signed him to that contract. But they let him go, which I think was the right thing to do. They shouldn't have matched that contract from Detroit. And now what are they getting killed about? You didn't sign Ben Gordon. How do you expect the team to be good without signing Ben Gordon? You have to understand that if you're not going to sign these players to these obscene dollars, somebody else is, and you're going to have to live with the ramifications of holding out to a principal. I'm not going to play a guy $60 million who isn't worth $60 million. But I don't think fans are ready to embrace that.
The GMs need to do a better job of explaining that to the fans, though. And that's the one thing, you know, I'm never going to be an NBA GM, but I think the one thing I would have been able to understand is that there are ways to color the fans' perception of you, and it'd be like, hey, look, here's why we did this. We did this because, you know, we have this summer coming up. I want to keep flexibility. I just don't think Ben Gordon's worth $60 million. This is a guy who is a streaky guy that comes off the bench. You're not going to win a title paying Ben Gordon $60 million. I don't know. I think we underestimate fans sometimes. I think fans, if they're presented with very logical reasons why things happen, they get it. And also, you know, you look at what happened with Chicago this year. The big reason they struggled was because of Derrick Rose, because he was hurt. And now he's healthy and they're playing better. You know, I don't think it had anything to do with Ben Gordon. You mentioned Dumars. He's done, you know, this is, we were talking about Danny before, how Danny hasn't been able to find those one or two extra guys. Dumars, despite the hit or misses with the big stuff, always seems to find these random guys like Jareb Cowe, whatever that guy's name is.
Jarebko.
Or Will Bynum. Like he has a knack for landing these guys. And I do think that's a real skill for GMs that we forget, are the ability to see somebody on another team who's not really making it and being like, you know what? I think that guy has talent. Why isn't that? Yeah, maybe I should try to get that guy. You know, like for instance, I really liked Ray Felton last summer. And it was for reasons that weren't logical. You know, statistically, he wasn't that good. He had been a disappointment in Charlotte. Nobody was going after him last summer. But if you ever read anything about Charlotte, the guy was like everybody's favorite guy on the team. Awesome personality. He had the pedigree. He was a number five pick. Just seemed to me like a change of scenery guy who could take off. I would have much rather have spent the whatever Dumars spent half of that on Ray Felton versus getting Ben Gordon. But that's the stuff that I think maybe as we move into this decade and we have GMs who aren't players as much, who are looking at this a little more analytically, maybe they'll start finding bargains like that. Do you think the owners are ready to make that change though?
I don't. Yeah, I think they should, but I don't. I've just heard too many anecdotes about owners and how starstruck so many of the owners still are in the league, and how they love to hang around with the ex-players, and they want to be part of that life. And, you know, hanging around with Daryl Morey, I'm sure that's a blast, but probably not, you know, you know, hanging out with, you know, Michael Jordan or whatever. It's just, it's not the same.
Right.
And I think so many of these owners get into the game in part because of the lifestyle and be able to be more important and be part of something that they couldn't be otherwise. And so they're not logical, which always bothers me, because to own an NBA team, unless you inherited the money, you had to be a pretty savvy businessman to make enough money to buy an NBA team.
Yeah.
And that means you had to have chosen the right guys to run your business. You had to be almost ruthless in your desire to be competitive and to win. And then they get to the NBA and they get all jello-y. And they start making all of these ridiculous things that they would never do in their own businesses. And that I don't understand.
Well, you know who's going to be interesting in this regard is Ted Leonsis. Because he's done an unbelievable job with the Capitals. I think he's a really smart guy. He's a guy that's run multiple businesses and done all the stuff that he's done over the last 20 years. And now he's taking over this Wizards team that, you know, locally is a mess. Cap-wise, they have the Gilbert Arenas that they can get out of that contract. It's probably the biggest gift I would say that anybody has gotten since Anthony Carter's agent forgot to mail the contract in, right? Which opened the door for
the title. I don't think they're getting out of it, though.
Really? You don't?
I don't think they're getting out. That will be Armageddon with the Players Association, because the league has not been able yet to get a player out on this moral turpitude clause. I mean, if we're on our test, I mean, what's worse, what Gilbert Arenas did, which was incredibly stupid, or Ron Artest running into the stands, punching people in the face and creating a riot that, I mean, it is amazing that more people weren't hurt in that thing. I mean, an absolute riot. And if the Pacers, who desperately wanted to get Ron Artest's contract off and use this turpitude clause, were told by the league, you know, they're not going to get it. I just don't, I don't think Arenas, what he did is going to raise a high enough standard that they're going to be able to avoid this contract. Now, if he goes to prison, then they've got the automatic out. But I don't think Gilbert Arenas is going to prison.
I'm in the minority, but I think what Arenas did was worse.
Why?
Because Artest reacted in the moment after a fight that was allowed to escalate for 5 minutes by the referees that Ben Wallace kept going and going and going, and it was a bad atmosphere anyway. You had a mostly, you had half full crowd of Detroit fans that were, that, you know, acted irresponsibly. Nobody's willing to remember that 5 years later. Artest gets hit by a beer, goes into the crowd, which obviously he shouldn't have done, and let's hope it never happens again. Steven Jackson was the guy who was in there throwing punches, though. I mean, I don't even think, did Artest actually ever even punch anybody? You know, I think he went in there.
The punch I remember is actually Jermaine O'Neal's punch of the dude on the court. But,
right.
I mean, that was the haymaker.
But I think, you know, it was a really terrible reaction. But what Arenas did to me was much worse because there was a lot of thought put into it. There was thought put into it of he had 36 hours to think about bringing the four guns in as some sort of really insane prank. Like, since when are four guns funny for a prank? And then to keep it going on Twitter and to just continually stick his tongue out at the league and to do the thing in the pregame warmups and to show no remorse at all. I thought that was worse. I really do. Maybe I'm crazy.
I think it was immature and stupid, and I think it goes right along with who Arenas has been. And you know, frankly, something that for the most part we in the media and other people have encouraged his whole career. We've liked that he's quirky. We've pushed him to continue to be that type of player. And, you know, he didn't understand the lines, that's clear. And he hugely crossed them in a terrible way. But Arenas isn't dangerous. He's not going to hurt anybody. I don't think he had any intention to, and I don't think he ever would.
Instead of my top 40 trade value, I should do a top 40 guys most likely to shoot another guy. That'd be fat. That'd be the biggest traffic record.
If you did the top 40 guys, though, admit it, Arenas wouldn't be on that list.
I mean, he does have four guns. I got one gun, but why do you need four?
He's a gun collector. It's like saying, well, why do you have four cars? Or some people collect guns. I don't. I don't own a gun, but some people collect guns for a living. My stepfather has a bunch of rifles and vintage things like that. He collects them. I don't, but I don't think he had the guns to shoot him.
Well, I think Stern is, you know, he can pretend publicly that he's outraged by this and all that stuff, but believe me, he's been laying in the weeds for years waiting for any sort of incident that could get him to crack down on not just guns, but the gambling, you know, an NBA and play-ins and locker room, stuff like that. He's been dying to do something about this. This to him was like, you know, he could kill two birds with one stone here. This is going to completely alter how the league deals with weapons and gambling and all this stuff, and he's been dying for something like this to happen.
Well, I agree with that, and I think the most underreported part of the story, and you're seeing this with the reaction of the players who I think unprecedentedly are out there criticizing Gilbert Arenas. I mean, when can you remember players from other teams going and criticizing another NBA player the way that you've kind of seen this? And I think this is orchestrated through the Players Association because you've got a collective bargaining agreement coming up. If Stern had his wish list of everything that he could do, number one on that list is to get rid of guaranteed contracts.
Yep.
And he has been unable to void these contracts based off of stupid player actions in the past. And I think he's now in a perfect position to first go for, we're not going to have guaranteed contracts anymore. He probably won't get it because I think the Players Association would never agree to a deal where there weren't guaranteed contracts. I think they would rather the league go away than do that. But his backup plan is going to be to incredibly strengthen this moral turpitude clause to the point that the teams have a number of very clearly defined reasons that they can get out of these guaranteed contracts so that teams aren't hamstrung when players do stupid things or when they become problems. And that will be a huge, huge win for the NBA, and they can thank Gilbert Arenas for it.
I think that's going to happen, and I also think there's going to be a compromise with the guaranteed contracts where you can sign somebody up to 6 years, but you cannot guarantee more than either 3 or 4 years of it. Like the guarantee, 4 years will be the absolute maximum, and that's it. And, you know, I think that's a fair compromise.
I think that's fair.
For the players. One last thing, because we got to let you go. John Wall, this is over. He's the number one pick. Nobody can challenge him.
No one will challenge him unless there's a, you know, an injury or, you know, something else we don't know about. He is far and away the best NBA prospect in this draft. I think if you look at this decade from 2000 to 2010, the only two better prospects who were considered number one picks at the time will be LeBron and Dwayne Wade, or LeBron and Dwight Howard.
See, I was going to say, I've only felt this strongly about three college players this decade, Carmelo and Durant. And this guy to me is like, he can't miss. He would have to fall out of a building or blow out his knee in 47 different places to not become a multiple all-star and a franchise guy.
And here's the scary thing with him. I've been watching him since his junior year. He's still getting better. Every game, he seems to add a little bit more. We always knew he was going to be one of the best athletes ever to come into the game. I mean, he has extraterrestrial athleticism.
Ooh, I like it. You had a new adjective. I like it.
You see him jump sometimes, and it looks like it's a special effect.
Yeah.
But I didn't think that he was this good of a passer, this good of a floor leader, this clutch of a player that he's shown in Kentucky. I mean, what doesn't this guy have?
Oh, what about his defense?
Yeah,
I mean, he's almost like – he's like Charles Woodson in football. Like, he doesn't just have turnovers. They're like game-changing turnovers that he can get. I love him because he can win a game for you and score 2 points, which I think the list of guys who can do that just in NBA history is small. But, you know, I've seen him control games where he wasn't even really making shots or doing anything other than just – being a teammate. Now, you know how you do that whole, you do the thing, which I had, it's the thing where all the lottery teams, what if they got the number one pick?
Yep.
Which I always enjoy, but really only like four or five of them are actually going to get it. In this case, it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, when you look at some of the possible teams that could end up with them, they either have point guards already. Like, what, for instance, what if the Knicks, Utah gets the number one pick from the Knicks. What do they do?
They're taking John Wall.
And then what happens to Darren Williams?
They'll either figure out how to play those guys together, or that's a great asset. But I guess, you know, I've talked to a number of teams already. This became apparent a few weeks ago, and I called those teams, and all of them were very consistent in that John Wall would be their pick, and most of them argued either we'll figure out how to play him together, or we'll get rid of the other guy because he's better. And frankly, he's better than Darren Williams.
Yes. Yeah. And I wrote
this
in the Utah.
I know that's hard for Utah fans to believe because they love Darren Williams, and Darren Williams is a great player, but he's better than Darren Williams.
I mentioned this in either a column or a tweet or something, and the Utah fans went crazy. John Wall's better than Darren Williams. I'm sorry. If you get the number one pick, you're taking John Wall, and you're going to trade Darren Williams. But there's some other teams, too, that would be – it would be kind of like, what happens if Golden State gets them? Like, the last thing they need is another guard, but they'd have to take them, and then it's basically free for all for the other guys in the team. But you could go on down the line. I think it's going to be a fascinating lottery, at least the most fascinating one we've had since Durant Odin. And I look forward to reading it.
Yeah, there's such a drop off, Bill. I mean, after that, I like Ed Davis and Derek Favors, and those are good guys. But this is going to be one of those lotteries where one team is going to strike the jackpot, and every other guy that's sitting in that room on lottery night is going to be pissed.
I'm trying to think. So in 07, Durant, LeBron, I mean, Durant, Odin, it wasn't a terrible thing to have number two.
Not at all.
Even in the Dwight Howard draft, Dwight Howard was a consensus one, but Okafor was not a bad consolation prize.
Absolutely.
LeBron, you had all those guys in that draft. Obviously, LeBron was the big prize, but, you know, at the time, people were talking of Darko like he was going to be the next Wilt. You had Chris Bosh, all this stuff. And when was the last time we've had such a drop-off? Kenya Martin? And he wasn't even good.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there was some thought, I think, this year's draft, because people didn't have Tyreke Evans and Brandon Jennings rated as high, I mean, the number two pick in this year's draft was Hasheem Thabeet, which I think you and I both thought immediately on draft night he was going to be a bust.
Oh, God.
At number two pick in the draft. So you went from Blake Griffin, who, if he's healthy, is a no-brainer NBA All-Star, to a guy that everybody was kind of scratching their head and thinking a bust. Now, I mean, with Tyreke Evans and Brandon Jennings, you can make the argument that this was a better draft than people thought.
Well, you had Rubio. Rubio was kind of lingering over everything. I think the difference is that Blake Griffin, you know, for some reason didn't carry that same weight with the general public that I think John Wall is going to carry as the season goes on and more people get to see him. And then in the playoffs, I just don't think that guy's going to lose in March Madness. I'm not betting against John Wall. I'm picking Kentucky. I'm telling you right now.
I think Kentucky's a great pick unless DeMarcus Cousin combusts the team somehow, which he might do.
Chad Ford, a pleasure. Please come back before the trade deadline so we can try to figure out this whole thing. I think there's going to be some trade deadline. I'm excited. Excited to read you. Thanks for coming on.
Take care, Bill.
Target's a shot off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway is home to the famous $5 footlong, so celebrate your favorite Subway famous $5 footlong, like the classic BLT or the big bold Black Forest ham and cheese. All stacked your way with the meats, cheeses, and fresh crisp veggies you love.